Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds and Under 30 Attack Dice. With you as always, I'm Davey, and I have with me Phil, my co-host. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm doing all right.
And with us tonight, we have a special guest for this topic. We'll get into that in a second, but we got Matt Martin coming out of Atlanta, Georgia. How are you doing, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing well.
Good. Hey, that's inaccurate, though. I mean, you're normally out of Atlanta, Georgia, but tonight you're in Seattle, so
currently up in Seattle right now, so complete other side of the country, but yeah. I still have Atlanta in my heart right now.
I appreciate that. So, hey, we always like to give the context for our episode. We are coming to you. Dreadfane is kind of out in the wild. We haven't hit the official release date yet, but it's out there. Everybody knows about it. We have not seen Beastgrave yet, and we've had 4 updates to the BAR, and that's where we are. You can always get in touch with us. We're at WGHcast. I'm going to give some thank yous. We're going to move those to the end of the episode. We are going to be coming at you tonight. We're going to be talking about Magor's Fiends, and that was Phil's idea, and I appreciate that. That is with the upcoming Warhammer Underworlds Online. We're going to hit you up with. We're going to get you a Steelhearts episode as well, but just a little prep for that. Take a look at these two warbands. But in the meantime, we got some community shout-outs to do. Big one is to James/Jimmy Molini, who won the Gen Con Grand Clash with Reavers. And I think that's a stand-up and salute to you,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. Reavers so, redemption.
Yeah. Korn cares not, except he kind of cares about this. That was rad as hell. So good to you. We got a little Season 1 Korn coming at you. Not quite the Reavers, but that's on tap for later. But Magors can get behind that. They can give a pat on the back. So, how about you guys? Any community shout outs you want to throw out right now?
I mean, for me, really just shout out to all the other content makers. Myself and my friends, we've kind of dipped our toes in the content making world ourselves. So just shout out to all the guys that have come before us and kind of helped pave the way and, foster a healthy community.
Yeah. I think that's we've talked about it before, but I like that you're using the word community. Like it feels real good. I talk a lot with all the other, many of the other creators. It feels good for everybody to support each other in this, and it's been cool. Speaking of creators, I did want to give a shout to Jonathan Davis. His Well of Power website is in beta. It's got deck guides. It's got the source of what I most went to Wigglehammer for, which was his links for all the websites that I could never remember exactly and was too lazy to bookmark. So he's got those in his site. So Well of Power is where you want to check out, which is a pretty sweet name. So good job there. Phil, you got anything to pitch here? Are you good?
I've been a little bit out of the loop this last week, so I'm going to have to pass. I've been light on hobby.
Fair enough. All right. We'll jump in before we get into our main episode of Magors. We're going to do a What the Hex is Going On with You. And Matthew, our guest, why don't you lead us off? What have you been doing in the Warhammer Underworlds hobby?
Well, sure. So if anyone is kind of active on the Facebook pages or the big Underworlds Discord server, you may have seen a new podcast kind of being advertised called Critical Defense, or Crit Def for short. And that's myself along with two of my good buddies, Corey Sullivan and JT Torrance. We're all located out of Atlanta, Georgia, and we decided to kind of put together our own little podcast, more focusing on more like a friendly vibe where we're all just in the same room cutting up together and just overall talking about the the game and all the related hobby aspects and just whatever meets our fancy for that discussion. So that's what I've been up to. And other than that, just playing as much as I can and just, enjoying all the different things that are floating around out there for the hobby.
Hey, Matt, what's been your mainline warband of late?
Honestly, it's been the Skaven. I've kind of taken that whole festering and hungering idea and been running with it a lot recently.
Yeah.
And then besides that, I still have my... my Godsworn hunt. They've been my passion ever since they've kind of come out. So those are the two I'm playing mostly right now.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, Matt and I had the pleasure of the Godsworn mirror match at the ATC singles event after the fact. So
it was just exploding mohawks everywhere.
There were many explosions. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And just to follow up on that, I got a chance to listen to your guys' first episode and it was great. For those who are wondering if they want to check it out, I really got a lot of the vibe of Claim the City, where they were recording. It had that great group vibe where everybody kind of knew each other and just enjoyed each other's company. And it was that kind of conversation. And I really enjoyed it for that. Really appreciate it for that. I'm really looking forward to you guys kicking out some more content. And I'm on board. I think I've already subscribed on Podbean. And once you get onto some more apps, I'll subscribe on my favorite app, but I appreciate you putting that out. And I mean, it seems like we set this up in order to pitch that, but that was like kind of coincidental.
Yeah, it actually was. It was very coincidental because we've been talking about doing this podcast for, you know, 6-7 months.
Yeah.
Been joking about it.
Well, I'll tell you, just a quick side. I was probably thinking about what the heck's for 6 or 7 months before we finally kicked it out. So that might be the choice incubation situation for podcasts. So
there you go.
If somebody just thought of one, it's gonna start happening for you in about 6 months here. for myself, I've been on the Objective Ghost grind after playing. I had some success with Control Steel Hearts, and then obviously the Control Molog down at ATC went well for me. And I realized that one of the play styles that I had not done much with was the objective play, like the hold objective play. And I thought the warband to try that out was Ghosts, also not one I'd tried much. And so I've been cranking out reps with them, and I've been finding that it is not a play style that I'm naturally suited to. I make a ton of mistakes, ton of errors. But I've been learning a lot about the game, and that's what makes me love this game. Is like there's so much to learn, so much to explore. You know, like after a ton of games with the Ghosts, I can switch over to something like Zarbag's Gits, and I've got a whole new nut to crack there. As far as even if I'm playing the same play style, there's a lot. It's a very different way of coming at it. So that's been great for me. I've been really enjoying that, and really enjoying getting my teeth kicked out the back of my head. So. Phil, what I know you've said you in the last week you've been having a lull. You've been carrying the standard. I haven't been able to make it to our league because of work, maybe you can talk about what you've been up to there.
Yeah, so we got league going. I've been running the Eyes of the Nine a lot, trying to make them work. It's starting to feel like a chore, which maybe means I should change it up a little bit here just to freshen things up. But yeah, it's been good. League's still just sort of kicking. We've got another new person who just joined up, so it's like we just keep getting more people, and that's great. And I you know, the more the merrier, in my opinion. You know, the more people you have to play against in this game, I think the better your experience, just because of, as you were just saying, like the number of different strategies and play styles and things, and the number of different opponents that you can have changes that feeling of the game too. So that's been really great. The other part of the hobby is I have been getting some reps against Davey's Ghosts, and I find your modesty a little funny, just because it's like, oh, I've been making so many mistakes, and it's like, huh, how many of these games has Davey beaten me in? If he's been making mistakes, then I must be making lots of mistakes too. But it's been fun, and it's been good. I've been facing, strangely, just lots and lots of Ghosts lately. So it's been interesting that everyone I've been facing lately at League has been playing Ghosts, and Davey's been playing Ghosts, and it's just like, man.
Well, if I could, there's kind of a point. I was just thinking, you said you've been playing a lot of Ghosts recently. I wonder if that has anything to do with the most recent BAR update, because my friends and I were guessing that it was going to help out objective play a lot. So possibly that's why you're seeing a slight resurgence in the Ghosts.
Could be. I could definitely see that.
I think it did nothing at all to hurt him, and it may have helped him, and I think you're dead on there. So yeah, good point. Phil, I would say, I think I said it at the time, and I still believe it. Like the last couple of games you and I played were some of the best. Some of the most enjoyable, because you had all kinds of like teleporting movement shenanigans, and I had the same. And it was all this like, there was what I love. Like my favorite games is when there's all this kind of head game going on in the power step. I was like, oh, I'm going to play this, and like, is that going to outsmart this guy, or am I just about to teleport next to him so that he can blow me away with a spell, or, you know, like all kinds of fun stuff happening.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, they've all been really great games. I just think it's like, oh man, if I've been losing them all when you've been having mistakes, but no, they've all been very close and it's all been really fun. So like, no hate to the ghost players. It's been super fun. It's been lots of close games. I definitely enjoy playing against them. It's like, man, everybody's playing ghosts these days.
Especially with Dreadfane being released. If you have any Dreadfane or people that own the Dreadfane set in your area, they're most definitely playing the new ghost.
Perennial ghost players who's been playing ghosts for about the last year came to the league this week with the new ghosts.
I did not know that. Is it Cameron?
Yes, Cameron. Yeah, I did not get to play against them, but I watched his game, and it looks like there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve there, because he had some struggles. But I think he said he really enjoyed them and that he thinks they're going to be his new favorite warband. So,
excellent. Cool.
Good things to look forward to as more people get to try them out, I think.
Yeah, Cameron's a sharp player. I think if he thinks they could be a favorite, they must be up there pretty well. All right. Before we leave this, what the hex is up with you? I want to say we got some nice feedback from Shuby on Facebook. He was suggesting as a possibility that we move this segment to the end, just dive right into our main topic. If you want to give us some feedback, that feels like something you would like, we can take a look at that. We might experiment with that with upcoming episodes. And as always, if you have something you think that we could be doing better or doing different that would make it more enjoyable, we're always happy to hear it. And I appreciate any of the feedback we get. So throw it at us. And in the meantime, we're going to jump onto Magors. And I want to say, Matt, we are bringing you on specifically for this episode because you brought Magors to the ATC. And I remember sitting down and being, frankly, a little relieved that I was not playing against you because I was looking over at you playing against the Guardians. And I was like, man, I am so out of practice against Magors. I do not know what I'd be doing. And I remember games about them against them and thinking, like, every one of these dudes is a threat. I think, Phil, the last time I played against Magors was against you. I had Zarbag's Gitz, and you pretty much wiped me off the board. Like, I was trying to get a little pride with, like, my last attack, and I think you might have killed my last dude with a Gore Fist attack just for, like, total humiliation. I think you, like, critted a Gore Fist for a concealed weapon or something like that, just, like, total embarrassment.
That does sound familiar. Four damage Gore Fist.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, a classic Gore Fist attack, 4 damage, so.
Yeah. Naturally.
Anyway, again, we're bringing this up because Magors are coming in for Warhammer Underworlds Online. That's that Season 1 Sweetness, which apparently is still up in play, as we saw at Gen Con. And Matt, you had the cojones to bring him to ATC. So
yeah, I mean, so it really wasn't too big of a, you know, gamble, I think, on our part. You know, the idea was someone kind of plays the more aggro play style, someone plays more defensive play style and hold objective play style. And for me, you know, I've just kind of been much more geared towards aggro ever since I started playing. I think just that style suits me.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been going through a progression of different Khorne or, you know, like Chaos warbands, you know, with the Reavers, Godsworn, and then Magors. I think it was just a natural progression. And I enjoyed playing them, but I definitely learned a ton about them by taking them to the ATC, which hopefully I get to share here with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We're glad to have you for it. Hey, so as we've done with in the past, like, this is our first sort of retrospective warband review. But we're gonna pattern it after our other ones where we talked about some of the new warbands. So we're gonna give you a brief review of the individual fighters, not necessarily give you every single stat, but just kind of give you our impressions of what that particular fighter is good for. We're gonna talk about card highlights, both warband specific and universals, And then we'll talk about overall strategies and matchups, some of the strengths and weaknesses, and how to play against them. So we're going to kick it right off with fighters here. And we're going to talk about, we got to talk about the leader first. So let's hit up McGore and Matt, special guest coming in. Why don't you hit us with your take on McGore?
So McGore, Red Hand, he is just, you know, a menace to look at. He starts off with pretty strong stats, two hammers, two damage. Big thing about his attack right off the bat is it has innate cleave, uninspired, which is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then other than that, he's got three move, you know, one block, and four health. So he starts off baseline already a strong fighter. I think that's the thing that strikes me, you know, most about him.
Yeah, I think that's real solid. How about when he inspires?
So when he inspires, he goes up to three damage. Still has two hammers, three damage. And then he goes up to four movement. Still keeps the one block and four health. So he gets a little bit faster, and his damage output is one-shotting a lot of different fighters now.
Absolutely. Yeah, strong leader. One of the... If you're thinking of like leaders that do a lot of work, McGore is up there. He certainly was in season one, and I think we'll talk a little bit about where he sits in season two and possibly season three. But yeah, he's one of the guys I think you think about when you think about leaders who are doing work. Phil, why don't you pick a fighter, Phil? Hey, your choice of fighters. Throw at me another one of them.
Okay. So I like. I'm hoping I'm getting them correct. So Zarkus is the one who you can never drive back, correct?
Nope. Other way around.
Gartok.
Other way around, yeah. Gartok. Yeah. All right. So Gartok's probably my favorite fighter in the Warband. Old Gary.
Yeah.
So similar to McGore, he's rolling up with two hammers, two damage. He doesn't have any other specials on his attack to start with. Three move, one block. Four health, so that's going to be pretty standard across the Warband. They all start pretty, you know, solid defensive stats, and then they're swinging, other than the dog, you know, two hammers, two damage. So you kind of know what you're getting into when they start. The only thing that's different about Gartok and Zarkus compared to McGore is they've got the Gore Fist. So if you miss them, right, and they're standing next to you, they get to punch you back with the Gore Fist. Not very accurate. It's two swords for one damage.
When inspired, right?
When inspired, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Otherwise, you're just on one sword.
Yeah, just one sword otherwise. But it's sort of, I don't know, it's nice in the sense that it gives you this mental play where it's like, oh man, if I miss this attack, I might just be getting punched back.
Sure.
Which is always fun. The really strong thing I think about Gartok, as I alluded to, he can't be driven back, like, mm-hmm, just ever. And that has messed people up in games where I've been playing these guys a lot, where they were planning on repositioning my fighters, and I was like, nope, he's just going to stay there. And people don't think about it necessarily because they're just used to being able to push fighters around.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of is a strong point for him, and to a lesser extent Zarkus as well. And something that I find to be really strong. When he is inspired, he becomes more accurate. He gets three dice instead of the extra damage. And he is probably the most accurate fighter in the Warband because of his specific upgrades, which we can hit on in a little bit here. But I like using him for some of the riskier attacks, like concealed weapon and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, that was going to be my point with those guys. I think Phil, you pretty much covered Gartok pretty well, and Zarkus is really similar. Stat-wise and everything, he has the Gore Fist, and when he inspires, they both have, you know, they go up to four movement, still have one block, four health. Zarkus has the innate knockback one on, mm-hmm, his fighter card. Even, mm-hmm, uninspired, he still has it.
Yeah.
So that is just the only thing that makes him really different from Gartok, besides their, you know, the anti-push stuff. Zarkus is, he... is a little bit behind Gartok in that a successful attack action still can drive back Zarkus, but an unsuccessful one doesn't.
Yeah.
So that opens up a lot of play that, through my experience with these guys, was really interesting to exploit by kind of like using hidden paths or feigned way and just teleporting them into your opponent's face and they can't get away.
Yeah. And I'll say for me, talking about those Gorefists, like I'm a very like risk averse player in my natural play style. And so coming in for an attack, like my natural inclination is like, oh man, like if this goes the worst possible way it could go, I could put myself in one shot range is often a thing I'm thinking about these. And so I hate attacking these dudes. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that just leaves Riptooth, who
right.
at one point was the sole sort of beast character. He's since been joined by Squiggs and everybody's favorite Grawl. But the unique thing about Riptooth is that he can still hold objectives while as those other beasts cannot. He can't carry weapons, but what he brings to this warband, he starts with one higher movement, so he starts at move 4. And then he bumps to move 5 on Inspire. He's throwing 3 for swords, which actually makes him the most accurate initial attacker out of the 4 of them. Doing 2 damage, Inspire bump to 3. And then one of the most, I would say, corner case rules, but he cleaves on crit, which is significant. We'll talk about it a little bit more later when we're talking about objectives to take. And then significantly for him, he bumps to 2 dodge when he inspires, which makes him a great opening attack guy, because if he manages to land that first attack, then not only has he got in there deep because he's got better move, but he's all of a sudden that, you know, it feels a lot worse to attack anyone with 2 dice instead of 1, because there's all that bigger chance for a crit defense too, or crit def. Hats off.
Yeah. always dreadful critical defense.
Yeah.
And something about Riptooth that's also nice is that, you know, you say 2 dodge, but just with the amount of cleave everyone keeps alluding to, there is tons of options for cleave right now.
Sure.
So 1 shield defense is not nearly as appealing as it was back in season 1.
Yeah.
So him having 2 dodge is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's our quick overview of fighters. We're going to move next into faction-specific and out-of-faction cards. And we'll start, I think, anytime you're building your deck, in my opinion, you should be starting with the objectives. So let's start with objectives. Matt, you can throw a in-faction or out-of-faction objective that you think is like key for this warband that you would
go ahead. So key for the warband... lots of aggro stuff, but I don't know if there's one that's like, this is key, like they have to have this, otherwise they're just done, you know? I think they kind of fall into the same umbrella as a lot of other warbands, and having like the more passive stuff to help them get going.
Sure.
But for me, I think some of their in-faction stuff that's really fun to bring, Show of Strength, right off the bat. If you're going to be getting in there with Magor, which you will be, you want to get rewarded for it. So it's a scored immediately. Where if your leader, Magor, takes an enemy fighter out of action, you get 1 glory.
Sure.
Easy peasy and really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what you want to do, right?
Yeah. You want to get in there and throw some dice and you know, stab people in the face. No escape is also really good for these guys because, again, with that aggro approach, you're going to be charging. You're going to be getting there and making attacks. And it's a more... It's 3 or more charge actions in this phase, and you get 1 glory immediately. And the thing that's nice about that is that you don't actually have to succeed with your attack actions. You just need to make those charges.
Literally does not matter what the dice showed. You're going to get that glory.
Yeah,
and see another objective.
Yeah. Another one, Khorne Sees Us. It's another score immediately. You kill 2 enemy fires in the same phase. It's not as consistent, I've found. So, personally, I don't run in most recent rendition of my Magor's deck, but it still is very Khorne-esque and a lot of fun to pull off.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one that I think like gains traction depending on how you built your deck. If you need shoring up against particular matchups where, like you say, like, I am in a little bit of trouble against goblins or ghosts who are... scoring a lot of glory. Well, that's a great objective to tech in that may still be scorable against, you know, Molag where you kill enough squigs. It's going to be hard pressed to score it against any of the Stormcast factions. But I think that's definitely one to keep in the consideration as far as that goes.
Yeah, right. Kind of getting into another card that I know is very popular for people to run with Magor is Rivers of Blood. Score two glory in an end phase, so any end phase, score two glory if all surviving friendly fighters, at least four, are wounded. And I know a lot of people like to run this in conjunction with Shardgale.
Yeah. if you ever want to feel even worse about Shardgale dropping, is do it against Magor, who you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Exactly. They might have Rivers of Blood in hand. Like, this might be
and super. The idea behind that play is not only, you know, does Shardgale help you score Rivers of Blood, but because your fighters are putting out three damage or two damage, you know, just by themselves, Shardgale brings a lot of four health fighters down into that one shot range. Absolutely. Or brings like a couple other, you know, mid range fighters, three health fighters down to two health. So they're also one-shot range for your other, you know, Gartok and Zarkus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it in theory. I've never run it myself, though, because I always worry that I'm not going to draw it when I have Shardgale in hand, or I'm going to have Shardgale to use, but it's going to be in a situation where I'd just be putting myself in a world of pain. Like, I can imagine so many aggro on aggro matchups where you'd just be super hesitant to put that down because it's like, oh man, I just put myself in one shot range for everything.
Yeah. And that's also why I stopped running it myself, because I felt like it hurt me as much as it helped me. And that, you know, and that was just really like it was a flip the coin to see who dies first.
Right.
Yeah. I will say,
Korn doesn't care.
Yeah. I am too much of a coward to run this card. Like I run this card and by extension Shardgale, right? In other warbands, I've tried to poach decks off the internet, and if they had Shardgale in them, I was like, oh my god, so stressful. That's so hard to do. I love playing against somebody when they bust out that Shardgale, and I'm not saying I love it because all of a sudden I think I'm going to win. I love it because it's such a challenge. Like, once Shardgale drops, you're like, oh my god, this is a player who is. You know, they're throwing all their cards on the table. They're going full out. That's very cool.
They're coming for you.
Yeah, exactly. Fun place.
And that kind of leads me into my favorite objective card for this warband, which is Bane of Champions.
Ooh, spicy choice.
All right.
Yeah.
Love that card because Riptooth. So the Bane Champions, it's a score immediately if Riptooth takes an enemy fighter out of action, but it's two glory.
It's a specifically
enemy leader.
Right? Yeah.
Yep. Sorry. Enemy leader out of action. Right. So, and I love this card just because it's so, you know, thematic and really just plays into the warband themselves. But they also have Victorious Duel, which is if your leader takes an enemy leader out of action, you score two glory immediately. So it's almost tempting to run both these in your deck, but obviously one's going to be a dead card once the other one scored. So if you choose between two, the reason why I like Bane of Champions, not only is it fashion specific, but then two, Riptooth has extra speed.
Sure.
Is going to get to an enemy leader, I think, faster than, or a little bit more easily than Magor will. And plus, this is just like salting the earth. As soon as you kill your opponent's enemy, their leader, I mean, most warbands, once you take out their leader, game is, you know, pretty much lost. And also now that, but you also score two glory right off of that additionally.
Yeah, plus the kill. Yeah, yeah. If you spike three glory off of that, it feels like a backbreaker. Like, that's a psychological blow that's tough to come back from.
Right. So you throw Prize Vendetta in your deck as well.
Yeah.
And Champions. And Riptooth is, you know, going to be the best boy.
Yeah, I love that card exists, and so if I'm going into Magors that I've not played before, I'm like, I don't know, they might be running this thing, like, who knows, and when Riptooth plunges into your line for an early attack and hits it, he's such an unpalatable target once he's got that two dodge, it's a tough choice that you're putting on somebody, like, hey, you want to throw at this guy who's got two dodge and four health, or do you want to risk the possibility that I'm running Bane of Champions? And I think that's that is vintage Warhammer Underworlds is putting difficult choices on your opponent. Phil, you got any objectives that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so to go along with some of what was alluded to earlier, where like although you're running these guys pretty aggro, you want to have some passive glory to sort of get them started. And No Escape is a pretty good example of that. One thing that I've liked to do in the past is combo that with Keep Moving or Quick on Your Feet. And the reason for that, so quick Keep Moving is make a move action in each of your activations. And Quick on Your Feet is sort of the same in that it's you have to make a move action with all of your surviving fighters at a minimum of three. What I like about these is you're probably going to be charging in most of your activations anyway. And so because you're doing that, you're already making moves. And so these are just extra glory that you can kind of get through doing that.
Sure.
Which is what you're also doing with No Escape.
Yeah. And I mean, then we've talked about that, where the strongest objectives are those that let you just do what you want to do anyway and get glory for it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And to sort of combo with that then is Fired Up or Shining Example, because all of these guys to inspire just need to make one successful attack. And so getting one or two fighters inspired really early on is not difficult. Shining Example, I think, is a little harder to score, but because it's not restricted, it's sometimes a little more appealing as that like extra passive glory to get yourself going in the early parts of the game.
Phil, the only comment I want to make on that is it's easy enough as long as you made your daily sacrifice to the dice gods.
And, very true. Very true. If there was some bloodletting before the game, you're probably good.
Yeah. So I pitch, this warband is one of the prime candidates for What Armor, which is a score immediately, one glory, if an attack with cleave succeeds. And that's because, unlike other warbands that need to have some shenanigans, a.k.a. the thorns I've been running hardcore, you already have
anyone?
What's that? Yeah, right. you have cleave right off the bat. And not only do you have cleave, but you have cleave innate with Magor, and then Riptooth, who is the most likely fighter to roll a cleave when uninspired. He's got crit on a cleave. I'm sorry, cleave on a crit. And yeah, right. The other one would be, I got to think about that. But anyway, so you have a backup right off the bat, and that is a great way to get some easy glory without having to score a kill. Just get a successful dice roll in there.
Right. And that's something I've learned through playing the aggro playstyle a lot, is you really have to have objectives that allow you to score when you aren't actually making kills as well. Because you're not always going to get kills. You're not always going to be rolling hot. And when you're not rolling hot, like, you need to have an outlet there. So I like there's a whole list of different objectives that are great for these guys. I think the recent bar has kind of hit on, kind of taking calculated risk out of there and stuff like that. But even personally, I didn't really like playing calculated risk as it was. But some other score melees I found are actually really good for these guys. Branching Fate is really good for them, because you have your two Dangle Bros, the Zarkus and Gartok, both rolling three dice on Inspired, and the Riptooth throwing three dice right off the bat. And Branching Fate is just a fantastic score immediately if you roll three attack dice or more, and each one of the resulting rolls is a different symbol. Mm-hmm. And I find it goes off very consistently for any warband that is making three dice attacks often.
Yeah, I think I've seen the stats. It's if you're rolling a three dice attack, it's somewhere around the 44% range, something like that. I'm caught off by a couple, but
So if you have it in hand and you're making attacks, I mean, it's essentially a coin flip if it'll go off or not.
Yeah.
Pretty sure Call of Shadespire did a review of that card, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So for people who need to know the numbers, go check it out.
There you go.
For myself, an objective that I thought was particularly suited to these guys is keep chopping, which is you need to make an attack in an attack action in four or more activations. And the reason the Magoras are particularly suited for this is that they have the Gore Fists, which it's a reaction during an enemy's attack action. So that means that their activation is not completed. So you can score attack actions in enemy activations, which will then free you up. The penalty always on keep them guessing or keep chopping or keep moving is that it is potentially making you make suboptimal activations in order to score that. But here, any time you can kind of cheat those cards, which is to free up an activation down the line, that's a bonus. And those guys bring that to the game here. And they do that also with some of their upgrades, like No Respite is a upgrade that will give you another attack during somebody else's attack action. So you have the potential to get to your four in less than all four of your activations. So,
and just a key note on that, my turn does not work with keep chopping.
Sure.
I learned that kind of the hard way myself. I think the most recent director's commentary highlighted that. Yep. My turn is after and not during. So that's just one key thing I want to throw out there for people that want to play these guys. But yeah. Yes, the Gore Fist, reactionary attack on failed attack actions against them does work with it. So it's a great option there.
And what Matt's talking about is anytime you're making an attack action that is after an opponent's attack action, that is by definition after that activation. That activation is now complete, which means you're now outside of that activation, which means that you won't contribute to keep chopping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and just a quick pro tip for everyone out there that wants to play these guys. Don't forget about your Gore Fist reactionary attacks.
Oh, yeah.
There was one time I could have scored keep chopping and won a game in a tournament, and I forgot to make my reactionary attack. And afterwards, I'm like, dang, I was so close to scoring this. And my buddy who was TOing it was like, you forgot the Gore Fist attack that would allow you to score that.
So bitter. Yeah.
I guess while we're on the topic of Gore Fist reactions, those can interrupt some other reaction cards, because since you're going to have the next activation, you get the reaction window first.
Sure. Yeah.
So just keep that in mind, both knowing that you can interrupt and in case your opponent doesn't realize that you just took their reaction window, because it can be pretty bad for your opponent if suddenly they're like, wait, I can't play my card.
Yeah. All right. I think we got a pretty good cover on objectives. Anybody got anything else they want to throw out before we move on?
Just all the score melees are available to these guys, both in faction and out. I think Superior Tactician is a great option for them if you want that big final push of glory. That's really it, though.
I will say, to Matt's point, there are a lot of score melees that are catering towards the aggro playstyle. There's any number of choices, be it Massive Assault or Advancing Strike or Precise Use of Force or anything like that. Like, depending on how you build things, you have a lot of options there as far as that goes. So, Master Stroke, I think, is one that's uniquely beneficial to these guys. If you take somebody out with a reaction, either as an attack action or a power card, because it says Warband, but because these guys have the built-in Gore Fist, that gives it just that little bit of extra oomph that might be get you over the edge to make that a more scorable. And with the, of course, it always works with the ever popular Ready for Action.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And No Respite, as we mentioned before. But anyway, let's bump to gambits. Phil, you got a gambit that is something that you would strongly consider bringing for these guys, or at least do you think is worthy of conversation for them?
So, and I don't know that I'm necessarily always gonna be giving like the greatest advice, because I didn't perform super well when I was playing these guys, but I found that inspiring them was super important, because that plus one move was just enough to catch people off guard and be like, oh man, they can go that far with all these charges that you're trying to get off. Having just one extra move sometimes made a huge difference. And their in-faction Inspiration Strikes, which is called Furious Inspiration, I think is a great card to have. I actually tend to run both of them because I like in very early turns being able to be like, I just automatically inspire the fighter that I needed to go in and get this kill. So I think that's a very strong card, and although it does something that a generic card does, I find having the additional option to be something that's really cool to have in your toolkit.
Sure. Right. I think if you think about it in the terms of what it provides, like if you think this is providing whichever fighter you place it on is getting plus one move, and then they're either getting plus one damage or plus one dice. If you had a ploy in your hand that said plus one move and plus one dice for the rest of the game, you'd say that's a pretty solid
yeah.
card. Yeah, I think they're a great candidate for that, and I like that they have the option for both if you really want to go that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Phil, anything else you want to hit from Gambits?
So some stranger choices that I've found to be really effective. So improvisation, for people who aren't familiar, that card is that when you play it, you discard the rest of your power hand and then get to draw up to three power cards. Because of how many ploys that I find that I'm using with these guys, whether it's speed bonuses or bonus dice, I find that I burn through my hand pretty quickly a lot of the time, and being able to just boost your hand at crucial moments I've found to be super important for just getting that little bit more out of these guys, whether that's drawing into ready for action or drawing into something like spectral wings to give yourself that needed speed to get that final charge in. It can be really great. And just in general, I like the psychological aspect of that card where your opponent's thinking, okay, they probably have, you know, one or two cards left in your hand. And then all of a sudden you're like, and I've just got a whole new hand to work with. And I think it just puts people on the back foot, which I think is always helpful when you're playing what can sometimes be a bit of a predictable force.
I think this is a good moment to jump in. What do you guys think of To the Victor, the Spoils? Because this is essentially improv that it's in faction, right? It's a reaction. Mm-hmm. You take somebody out with three or more wounds, you get to draw three cards. So the same thing, you're trading one card for three. Improv makes you discard everything. To the Victor makes you requires that you have removed somebody with three wounds.
Right. And so that was actually one card that I want to talk about. Because in getting ready for the ATC, myself and my teammates, you know, we have three war bands, and none of us can have the same cards in our deck. So for me, I love having the option of being able to draw cards, whether it be Duel of Wits, Improvisation, or what's the other one where, I can't remember, where you discard a number of cards and you draw that number back up.
Trust of Luck.
Yeah, yep. Trust the Luck, which there's certain builds that's actually a better card, which is, you know, a whole different topic. But I love having the option to draw cards, and in a game with cards and decks, being able to draw cards is extremely powerful. So my solution to not having improvisation for the ATC was to include To the Victor of the Spoils. Yeah. But one of the things you just need to watch out for is obviously it's not always easy killing a three wound fighter.
Sure.
So you really have to like know what you're getting yourself into if you're bringing that card to the fight.
Yeah, but I will say that like a three wound fighter is much less of a. There's some cards that only trigger on like a four wound fighter, and I'm thinking the Godsworn, which we all know and love here.
Right. And a worthy kill and worthy deed.
Sure, but in the case of a three wound fighter, everyone's got multiple three wound fighters, be you goblins mm-hmm. or Godsworn or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that's the penalty. Like, if you're playing against Steelhearts or something like that, who are sitting back, like it might be a tall order to pull off a kill. And if you don't pull off the kill, then that's a dead card in your hand. So
yeah, but if you love drawing cards,
sure. And that's interesting. Like I think we did an ep on deck size and talked a little bit about that, but I think that's one of the spots I found people's mileage varies a ton in this game is how much they value that draw mechanic. Some people live and die by it, and some people could care less. How about, so if that was one you want to talk about. What else do you want to talk about there, Matt?
So, yeah, Fierce Inspiration was a big one. Another one for these guys that's fashion specific is Demonic Resilience.
Oh, man. Oh, right. So brutal.
So good.
Yeah. Next, I need to look up the card to tell you the exact wording on it. But actually, here it is. First friendly fighter who suffers any amount of damage in the next activation only suffers one damage. So it's a great card to kind of buy you that insurance. You go in there with, we'll say, Riptooth or something. You're trying to get a big kill. And then whether it succeeds or fails, your fighter is going to be exposed in your opponent's, you know, upcoming activation. You play this card and helps ensure that at least you're going to stay around for another turn. So it's a great card for defensive, minded stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it almost robs your opponent of an activation, right? Like, unless somehow one damage is worth it for them, or they got something really productive to do that is not attacking, it feels brutal. And Phil's been really good about using this, whether it's this or the Blood Reavers version, where he'll wait until I've played some cards, like I'm like boosting up my, like, all right, I got plus two attack dice, and I'm gonna get extra damage on a crit, and oh no, I can only cause one damage. Oh, all right,
right.
I guess I'll go on guard with this guy. Or, you know,
yeah,
just heartbreaker.
And that's huge in a game where people are playing cards. You know, 2-3 card combos, getting ready to get a big kill. I mean, this warband has 4 health fighters, so it takes a lot for certain warbands to one-shot people.
Yeah.
So if you see your opponent loading up, throwing, all right, this card. Demonic Resilience, and you just ruined all that for them.
Yeah, I mean, let's say that they got as high as 3 cards spent, and you spent 1. You're spending 5% of your power deck, assuming you're going with 20, to negate 15% of theirs. That's a great trade. Like, if you looked at it in fighters, and you're trading one fighter for 3, you'd do that every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge power card. I think it is one of a great strength of this warband, is that just that they have that. Any other games you want to talk about, Matt?
Besides the whole in faction, not so much. I'm sure there's a couple that, you know, are all right here and there, but really when you start getting into the universals, I think that unlocks the power for these guys.
Sure.
Fueled by Fury is one that I almost always include in aggro builds, because it gives you the insurance that you're going to go in for this attack, you need to go off. Fueled by Fury helps make sure that if you have, you know, just a terrible first roll, you get to reroll again or reroll any of those dice that missed.
Sure.
That's really important for, especially an aggro build, that their inspiration mechanic is based on successful attack actions. Anything to boost the likelihood those attacks will go off is, I think, a complete necessity for these guys.
Yeah,
definitely.
Just other cards. You go ahead. You know, I was going to kind of go off on a tangent with some other cards.
Yeah, no problem. I was thinking Upper Hand is a candidate here. Like, it became restricted, which makes you have to look a lot harder at it. But this is your inspiration mechanic, right? Like, successfully making an attack. So if you can convert what would be a tied/failed attack into a successful attack, you may have just inspired a fighter. And a lot of times you have in this warband, because you start out on the lower end of the damage realm and with 2 damage on all your guys, a lot of times you are coming after somebody, you've already hit them once, and the second attack is going to finish them off. So this is a situation where even if you have a lot of dice and they somehow, you know, luck out, or you don't have a great one, like you can convert it to a success and a kill, which will then score you some of your other objectives. I think this is one of the warbands where you really think about Upper Hand as being worth the restricted slot.
Right. For unrestricted slot, they also boost their, I think helps out these guys a lot. Inspired Attack is a great card for them.
Excellent. Plus
1 dice and plus 1 damage for the first attack action with a range of 1 made by Inspired Friendly Fighter. Mm-hmm. And as you know, these guys are really kind of, one of their weaknesses is that they're limited by their range. They're all range 1 attacks. So that Inspired Attack plays right into what they're already going to be doing and gives them extra dice and even extra damage. So now you're potentially putting Magor or Riptooth up to 4 damage, and then Zarkus and Gartok up to 3 damage. So they're one-shotting a lot of fighters.
Sure. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. But it puts you in, like, that's a lot of time. If you could, because these guys are range 1, you are a lot of times you're having to make a charge. It's not like you're a profiteer where you're saying, well, I'm going to make this attack, but I'll still be in range next round. You're saying I'm putting all this into this one attack here. And so not only do I need to make it count on the damage scale, but I need to make sure it lands. And so this does both those things, right?
Right. So it's a great card for them.
Yeah.
And also to kind of get your guys into position, because these guys start off pretty slow, honestly, with a three move for the the human fighters or whatever, the non-dog fighters, and four for the doggo. They're not the fastest. So they need a boost of speed, and Spectral Wings is great for that, to really get them in there.
Sure. Get you in the mix and then involved.
Right.
For me, I was looking at both my turn and aggressive defense are attacks that are pretty handy, and they happen on a reaction. So if you're already taking Master Stroke as a score immediate for taking somebody out of action with a reaction, this kind of stacks the number of cards that will let you do that on top of any Gore Fist successes that you're going to get. This becomes a set of cards that you're more interested in looking at as far as the possibility for them.
Yeah. And I really like those as well, because these guys are sort of innately tough. Mm-hmm. Four wounds, and I mean, we could sort of talk about whether one block is actually tough anymore, but like knowing that you're probably going to survive most fighters' first hit means that you can turn your opponent's early attacks into attacks for yourself.
Yeah.
And so even if it's an even trade, it's probably good for you, especially if you inspire off of it as well.
Yeah, and as an aside, like we've talked about Gartok, my turn is more effective on Gartok because you know he's not going to get pushed back. So he's going to get to push one from wherever he stands so long as he survives. And that can be a pretty big deal. Like even if he's not attacking the person who attacked him, you can use that to catapult you over to get somebody that you really want to get, you know. So that's another reason it's particularly strong here.
Yep. There's two other cards that I really want to hit on. Hidden Paths. Really important for these guys. Because, again, the slow movement, if you get in a situation where your opponent is playing more defensive and they either want to offset the boards or play long, Hidden Paths allows you to teleport that fighter into your enemy's, zone, into their backfield. But more importantly, also with Gartok and Zarkus and their anti drive back mechanic, Hidden Paths is something that I like to play with Gartok a lot, where I'll put Gartok kind of off on the side, Hidden Paths him in, and I don't really have to worry about him getting trapped in the corner somewhere and taking damage because he can't be driven back. So that's a person, the card that I like to play with Gartok a lot, just because he is very flexible with getting back there and still surviving. So sure. I like Hidden Paths a lot for them, especially that fighter.
Yeah. I mean, I think it works on them both, right? Because, like, it's happening on that failed, on that tied thing, so they're both triggering it. But I mean, almost more important than anything else is Zarkus is pictured on that card, so it's thematic, right? Go ahead. You got another one?
The last card that, besides obviously Ray Fraction, I mean, I think it's just a given with these guys. But the other card that I think a lot of people know about, but for some reason I don't see it played as often as I would think it would be, but it's key for these guys is Second Win. And Second Win, right, for anyone that doesn't know, is choose a friendly fighter that's made a charge action this phase, and the next activation they can be activated as if they've moved rather than charged. Mm-hmm. So it's a really fantastic card. You run Riptooth in there, tries to take a bite at an enemy leader to score you Band of Champions, misses, and then your opponent has this sense like, okay, well, Riptooth charged, I'm safe now, I can do something else. Then all of a sudden your activation comes back around, you play Second Wind. And I've seen a lot of opponents start sweating bullets after that card's thrown down. So, sure.
And here's the thing, is they're going to be sweating bullets for the next one or two games in that match as well. Because all of a sudden every charge is live for another attack. Like, I love the psychological game that plays. So, yeah, great choice.
Right. And then also helps you score cards like Keep Chopping if you're bringing that. Because, say, you have three fighters to make that fourth, attack action. Second Wind helps with that. So, to me, that's like my golden gem for my deck with these guys.
Sure. Great point. For me, I'm going to throw out an edge case card here, and that's a horrifying howl. And I think it ends up being people's like 11th or 12th gambit, possibly, maybe not. But this is a ploy that selects a fighter who is adjacent to a friendly fighter. I should say selects an enemy fighter and then pushes them 2 hexes. And what I find particularly cool about this is, like, let's say you're in the Malag matchup and you charge in and you're either miss or you hit, but you have not done enough damage to kill him. 2 hexes is enough to push Malag all the way out of combat. And so it may be that he is already locked out as far as movement. You know, maybe he's already got 2 move tokens or something like that. Or maybe he's not, but what you're doing is you're saying, like, okay, you got one more try. Like, you moved up to here. I'm giving you that push. Now you got one more swing. And Malag is often on about a 50-50. So you're saying you're on a 50-50 to be done for the rest of your round. Alternatively, this can be used to, like, let's say you've got a forward fighter, like, example, Riptooth. Riptooth dives in, gets somebody that you really want to take down. You do some damage. He's not dead yet. And then you use that, and you kind of, like, rugby pass, like, lateral that fighter back into range of your other fighters. So I think this is a card to keep your eye on. If we see some kind of shakeup when Beast Grave drops, this may be a card that you want to be thinking about, because it may provide some manipulation to the board state, which is a big deal. Like a 2 hex push, that's a big deal. So that's my rogue choice, I guess, for this section.
Yeah. Anytime you're able to push enemy model 2 hexes, it's worth considering. That's a big deal. Sure. I know in my deck for my gores, I run distraction. You know, it's more versatile, but it's only 1 hex.
Yep.
So having 2 hexes is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, distraction is an incredible card. So I think this enters into the conversation. Possibly right on the edge there. Anybody got any other gambits we want to hit before we move to upgrades?
Twist the knife.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if there's a warband that wanted it, it's this one.
Yeah, get that killing when you really need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to make somebody feel really bad about getting gore-fisted, it's gore-fist twist the knife.
Yeah.
On top of that is that you are not going to get rebounded on a gore-fist. Like, this is a time where twist the knife trumps, because you are almost certainly going to have the next activation.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Good choices. Upgrades. How about, Phil, why don't you roll us off with the upgrades? And you pick in faction or out of faction. What upgrades are tickling your fancy for Magors?
So I'll start things off with some probably pretty obvious in faction stuff. But I think Brutal Charge is a super fun one. You're going to be charging anyway. So while normally having an upgrade that only adds accuracy on a charge might not feel like the best choice, since it's kind of in the vein of what you wanted to do anyway, just being able to effectively say, hey, this fighter now has +1 dice, is obviously pretty strong. We like ploys that give +1 dice, so upgrades that give +1 dice they have to be at least as good, if not somewhat better. And then two that I really like, but I don't think many other people play, is Wrathful Blows and Rage Fueled Attacks. These are the two upgrades that are specific to Gartok and Zarkus. The one gives +1 dice for Gartok, so he's now on base 4 dice for all of his attacks, and I guess when he's inspired, base 3 dice for his Gore Fist, which is obviously pretty darn good when you can almost guarantee that that thing's going to hit. And then Wrathful Blows is another way to get yourself, or I guess it's the other way around. Rage Field Attacks is the +1 damage. But so you end up with another great strength option that's not restricted. And I think, as we mentioned earlier, where most of these guys start at the sort of lower end of damage, I mean, 2 damage is pretty average, I guess. Having the option to bump your damage up 1 can actually be, or at least in my opinion, it feels really important for these guys, because breaking three starts to put you in one shot range for a lot of warbands.
Sure.
And then you're not too far off from getting people with four.
And all right. I will tell you, if I was feeling cagey about suffering a one damage gore fist attack, I am really scared about taking two damage up a gore fist. Like that really makes the, it really puts the pressure on your opponent as far as determining whether they're going to make an attack there, if they're, particularly if they're obviously range one attacks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it sort of starts to put all of them on this sort of even keel where in some situations people can feel like Gartok and Zarkus, because they're hitting at two damage, they know they're kind of safe from them. But as soon as you put everybody on three damage, it's sort of like, well, now who do you, what's the target priority now, right? Because they can all hit equally hard.
Right, absolutely. Matt, upgrades in faction or out of faction, what are you looking at? What are you looking to pull for a card to throw in this deck if you're looking at upgrades?
Yeah, just kind of going off that same idea with boosting the damage. We already talked about Inspired Attack with the Gambits. With the upgrades, I think just universal, great strength and concealed weapon are key for these guys.
Yeah.
Great strength allows Magore and Riptooth to get up to that four damage output.
Yeah.
And then concealed weapon, if you throw that on Gartok or Zarkus, throwing three dice is a lot. And, pretty good chance of rolling a crit. They roll a crit, now they're doing, instead of two damage, do four damage themselves. So
sure.
Those two are great cards for them. But for in faction stuff, I think they got a couple different options that Phil already touched on. One that I like a lot is Trophy Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get Trophy Hunter, just so anyone knows. Essentially, it's get an extra glory for a kill, but it's restricted to Magore. So it's Tome of Offerings, but it's only for Magore. And the reason why I like that so much is because obviously you get the extra glory for doing what you want to do already, but then it's unrestricted. So when Tome of Offerings became restricted, instantly I replaced it with Trophy Hunter.
Sure. Good choice. For me, keeping on Magore, I think Gory Visage that came out in the Leaders Pack, which is one of the upgrades that reduces damage by one to a minimum of one, that can be a big deal. Often because you're potentially running some not insignificant portion of your objective deck out of Magore if you have Show of Strength or What Armor. Like he's a key piece for scoring those things. So I think that's always good, and it makes the math really hard, especially if somebody's coming after you with, like, hoping to do, I'm going to chip them with two damage hits. All of a sudden, that's four hits, which is just awful, in this game.
Right.
That's too much of an energy expenditure.
It's a potion of constitution that doesn't get consumed and discarded after use.
Right, exactly. Other upgrades. I think this Warband is perhaps interested in ranged attacks, and I'm talking Nullstone arrows or dark darts, or even shade glass darts. And I say this because you may be taking something like No Escape, where all you have to get three charges off, and if somebody's deployed very defensively, you're going to need extra help. Like that third fighter might not be in range, and giving them a range three attack is going to be the thing that might make it happen for you.
Right.
You can get additional synergy by going Dark Darts, which got Cleave, which will give you another route for scoring Wood Armor. So you can do that without necessarily having to lean on Magore or crit off of Riptooth. Nullstone Arrows in particular for range, that is banana town. So that is really handy as far as helping you get someone involved. And here's the thing. You make a successful attack with one of these ranged attacks, and all of a sudden you've boosted the speed on that fighter. For the next round, they can come in with their actual melee attack.
Right.
I think there's...
Because they get inspired after that successful attack.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a lot of synergy with including one or two of these ranged attacks in the Warband, and you pick yours to chase. It could even be Seeking Stones if you think... dodge warbands are the thing that you're concerned about.
Yeah, if you want to ensnare some of them.
Yeah, ensnare.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I completely agree. I like to run dark darts and shade glass darts in my McGore's deck to give me more options for range. And also to help, you know, with things like keep chopping. And I just like shade glass darts because the option to, or potential to roll crit and get extra damage out of that attack. That's why I like to run that one. And then also rolling three dice, I use branching fate a lot. Yeah. So it's another option for branching fate. So just a lot of synergy there with those kind of range attack upgrades.
Do we have any other upgrades we want to hit before we move on here?
Potion of Rage. Extra dice. I think that's a staple for these guys. Yeah. You know, they have to, you know, they have to get their attacks off. So two dice is big. And again, Prize Vendetta. I love running that in here. It's unrestricted, and I throw that on Riptooth, and that Riptooth is it's going to kill your leader one way or another.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
And some other ones that are maybe some dark horse choices, Fading Form and Superior Agility are two that I've been looking at recently as maybe some options to help make sure you get your fighters into the fight. Fading Form basically turns you into a ghost. You can move through lethal hexes, opponents, fighters, and blocked hexes and just go right in. So, like, if you were to put that on to Riptooth, now he basically can just charge five if he's inspired anywhere he wants, and that's super scary. And then Superior Agility is that when you could be driven back, you just push your fighter instead. And although Magor is probably the only one who's going to benefit from this, because Gartok and Zarkus already can't be driven back in a lot of situations, making it so that Magor can't be driven back either is going to probably put a bit of a damper on your opponent's plans, because now Magor is just going to stick right on him.
Sure.
It lets you don't play, want.
Yeah. It lets you play more boldly around lethal hexes. It lets you avoid trap and pit trap because you're not getting driven back. And again, like anytime you're setting up something that makes me have to double guess whether I really want to attack this guy, that is put more psychological pressure on your opponent. So I think those are really good choices.
Yeah. Another in faction card that I think we missed, or you know, correct me if we already talked about this one, but No Respite.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yep.
I don't know if we touched on that one, but allows you to make an attack action with a fighter before they're taken out of action. Mm-hmm. So again, that card helps you score things, you know, like keep chopping or whatever. But then, you know, Master Stroke is a reactionary attack. And just again, getting the, you know, action economy, getting those extra attacks out there.
Sure. And this is a warband that's putting out high quality attacks, so getting even one extra is a good deal.
One other thing that I really like about playing No Respite is just that it's I've seen it put opponents in this weird situation where they think like, well, I want to kill this fighter so that they don't attack me, but I don't want to attack them because they could just end up killing my fighter. And so it's like, I think most of the time it's still better to take them out, but in some cases it seems like they start to avoid them and then just let them keep running around and chopping people.
Yeah.
So it's sort of that interesting mind game effect, which I think is always strong when you can sort of adjust your opponent's plan.
So the last card that I just want to touch on for upgrades, I mean, there's tons and tons of upgrades, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot more great options out there for him. But I know Tony Field on his blog, which is called End Phase, he had an article from back in May that I remember reading that was talking about aggro. I think it was called like Aggro or Bust or aggro or Nothing or something like that. But he made some really good points in there if you're going to be playing aggro, how to approach that warband. And basically, if your warband is fast but not accurate, you know, focus on stuff like accuracy. If you need help in damage output, increase stuff to give them more damage output. With these guys, even though they're pretty decently fast, you know, with with four speed once inspired, or five speed once inspired, they still need that help for speed. So great speed, or, you know, Sprint or whatever universal card you want to throw in there. And going back with Spectral Wings too, from the Gambits, from the ploys, that stuff is really key for these guys to help them get into the fight, or other upgrades like Fanway Crystal or something that's going to help their mobility, I think are really key for them.
Sure.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I think that covers some of the cards. Let's talk about like the overall strategies that you would be thinking if you're bringing these guys. What are you building towards? And I don't think I'm surprising anybody by saying like the default for these guys is going to be aggro, right? Like they've got it written all over them. They've got attacks. They inspire by attacks. Like that is clearly what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And a lot of their in-faction cards are all built around that. So that is the default where you're operating out of. And I will say, taking aggro warbands in general, like you, a lot of times you're looking at, I'm doing this aggro thing, does somebody else doing better? And a number of warbands, you say, yep, Magors does this better. So why am I not taking Magors instead?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I love to run them as all defensive, all hold objective, pass glory. But, you know, every once in a while, I'll take them and go aggro, too.
Sure, yeah. just to really catch somebody out.
They're I think, the primary aggro warband in the game right now, besides Molog. Before Molog, it was really these guys and, you know, the orcs. But these guys just did what they did better, so... Yeah, I think aggro is the play style you take with these guys.
Yeah,
I definitely agree. I think unless you really want to try and be a trendsetter, you're playing aggro with these guys because it works. Like, they're geared towards it. It's good. Everybody knows that these guys are scary if they're trying to chop your face. So you just, you know, why not? If it's not broken, don't fix it, right? But to that point, I do think, and this is something that we've talked about before, Davey, is that there does seem like there's probably something there for playing objective defensive play with these guys, because you have innately two fighters who are very hard to move.
Yeah.
And there's ways to make your other fighters hard to move, and you don't, and you know, they've got natural kickback from failed attacks. So if you can boost their defense, it's like, oh man, they're even more likely to get to Gore Fist.
Yep.
So I think you could, I haven't tried it yet, but I think you could try like a defensive counterpunch style of play with these guys, and it might work.
Sure.
Somebody who's crazier than me, go ahead and try it, figure it out. And report back to us.
Well, it's a great idea too, because if your opponent sees that you're holding the objectives and scoring glory, they're like, "Oh man, well, I gotta go to them. Like, I can't sit back and let them keep doing this." So they're going to come to you, and it's almost like you're setting a trap for them.
Sure.
So yeah. There definitely is something there. I haven't personally tried it, but yeah, like Phil said, someone get out there and try and let us know how it works.
Sure, and to that further point, like four fighters is not amazing, but it's not terrible for holding three objectives. And then they get decent speed when they inspire, which lets you get to objectives without crazy shenanigans.
Right.
Definitely.
And that kind of, but you know, really I think the only time it's going to work is in the first game.
Yeah,
and specifically if you lose the board roll off and you get three objective tokens, or if your opponents run Fanway and they want to throw objective token on your board. But yeah, it's a gimmick.
Yeah.
So if you want to try it that way, sure.
But I will say from my ATC experience, if you get if you can get one game up on somebody with a surprise, then all you got to do is win one out of the next two. That's definitely so. I think there is room to experiment. I just haven't had time to do that yet. So,
if you're going to be going to, like the GW stores like to run best of one tournaments, if you're going to be in a format like that, that's a good option.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep.
All right. Let's talk strength and weaknesses overall as a warband. And I'm gonna start this off. I think one of the big strengths of this warband is that they have good dangle bros. I think Gartok and Zarkus are, as far as like non-main fighters go, they're some of the best in the game. In fact, Garthok is my most hated fighter in this warband. I've often been running things, whether I was running objectives or the Godsworn deck I built, I think ran both trap and pit trap. And when you can't drive a guy back to get that one extra damage, man, it feels awful having those two cards in your hand and you just can't use them. I think a huge strength of this warband is that even their non-mainline guys are pretty darn good.
Right. Yeah, the innate cleave on Magor, the speed, two dodge on Riptooth, the three hammers, an anti-push or anti-drive back tech from the Dangle Bros. Those are all strengths of this warband.
Sure.
Yeah, I think we could sort of summarize that as saying they've got really strong base stats. Like, compared to a lot of warbands, there's nobody you look at and just kind of go, yep, this is the bad guy. It's like, no, these guys are all scary in some way. And once they're inspired, they're even scarier. So,
I occasionally think Zarkus is I feel like he's the weakest fighter, but I can think of a game I was playing against Chris Spark where the very first thing he did was charge him in, hit the Briar Queen, knock her back, score, get the hints. And I was like, what is going on? And like, all of a sudden he had his glory train started on just like a right out of the gate. And then that dude was inspired and he all of a sudden was, he had a good gore fist attack to defend himself. So, a good Dangle Bros. Weaknesses, Matt, if you were to identify some weaknesses for this warband, what would you say?
The huge weakness of this warband is the range one attacks.
Absolutely.
That was something that I really, really struggled with during the ATC, because that was right before the most recent bar update. So a lot of the range and spell stuff was still, unrestricted. So running up against Ilthari's Guardians or Thunderix Profiteers was a tough, tough matchup because they can just sit back and, pop you from three hexes away and you're still sitting there trying to get up into their zone.
Yeah.
So their range one attacks is, I think, their most glaring weakness.
Absolutely. Phil, another weakness.
So I guess I have two things I was thinking of. One, just to build off the previous point of their range one attacks, is that their pre-inspired movement speed, like Garthok aside, because it's three, and if you're getting hit with range three attacks, that one extra drive back means that all of a sudden you have to have started closer than where you needed to be to get your charge off. Otherwise, you are now out of range completely.
Right.
And it's like that kind of repositioning can ruin games for aggro warbands.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why I always like to have ways to get them inspired without attacking, because you need some way to get them a little faster, and that's one way to do it without upgrades. But so definitely feeling that with the range one attacks. And then to sort of the other side of that, if you can get in an attack with those range one attacks, this is a dice game, and I mean, maybe it's a little too obvious, but like if you're playing aggro, your whole game plan hinges on dice.
Yeah.
And if your dice don't go for you, it's going to really, really hurt. And like, while these guys are pretty accurate once they're inspired, I've definitely had games with, four and five dice attacks that just never hit.
Sure.
Nothing's guaranteed. And if all your objective cards require you to be getting attacks off, you may be having rough games where you did nothing wrong, right? You played your game exactly the way you were supposed to, and you still couldn't score anything.
Sure. And to that point, like, dice hurt them, and bad dice hurt them, I should say, and bad dice early in the game hurt them even more, because if you don't get inspired, if you don't hit that attack, then you don't get inspired, which makes it harder to hit the next attack, and it just, like, there's a negative snowball that can occur there.
Yeah.
I would say the other drawback with being exclusively range one is that somebody who's got range 2 or something like that mm-hmm. is more likely to get multiple activations in a round that take advantage of any upgrades you played on them. So if I've got great strength on, let's say, Galleon, he may be able to make an attack before he has to charge in. Often, these guys are having to charge in order to get that attack off, which means that you're getting less mileage out of any resources you put into them. So if you put, you know, accuracy or damage upgrades on them, you're less likely to be able to leverage those for multiple activations as you are with a warband that has a range 2 or range 3 attack, basically.
Right. And that's a matchup I play with ATC against a Molog player. That basically happened to me, where Molog just kind of sat there in the middle of the boards, and I would charge in, miss my attack, and he would just bop me. One shot my fighter. And then it was like three guys, one after another, just like ducks in a row, just charge in, miss, die.
I think that might cover our core strengths and weaknesses as Warband. Anybody got anything else they want to throw out?
I don't know if it's necessarily a weakness, but I think from games that I've been playing, I feel it. The numbers 4 doesn't feel bad because you're like, well, Stormcast have 3 fighter warbands, but a lot of the time you are hoping, you know, for things like keep chopping where you needed to make 4 attacks. And as we talked about, lots of your attacks are off of charges. So it's like, as soon as you lose that one guy, all of a sudden things get a lot tighter. And it's like, oh man, if I'm out of position with one guy now, I probably can't score my objectives. Mm-hmm. And that is, I don't know that it's necessarily a weakness, but it's something I feel very keenly in games.
Sure.
And I think it's something that can definitely be exploited by somebody who is aware of what you're trying to do with your Magors.
Sure. I mean, to that point, it's not a game that we talked about, but sidestep is like a prime choice for these guys, because if you can step one closer and get even one more activation out of a quality fighter like Magor in a round, then that is a huge deal. You know, get them into attack and then charge, or
sure,
you know, whatever the case may be. So, all right, the last thing we're going to hit before we close things up is our matchups. So we think about what their matchups into the three different core playstyles are: aggro, objective control, and then of course there's always flex in there. It's a little harder to hit, but Magor into the aggro matchup. Matt, what are you thinking here? I mean, it you know, may seem self-apparent, but if you hit some particular warbands or something like that, we can expand on it more.
Well, it depends on how lucky you feel. I feel like when you're going into an aggro on aggro, it's pretty much who's going to be getting the kills in quicker. So if you can get attacks in and, you know, you got decent dice, you stand a pretty good chance against any other aggro warband. Where they really start to struggle is when you start running into Thunderous Profiteers, or even, you know, like Molog or any warband that's playing aggro but has range. Is able to sit back a little further. You know, just going straight into all the stuff we just got done talking about, you're gonna really suffer if you're not able to get to your opponent and they're able to sit back and shoot you. So that's a tough matchup for them. But other than that, aggro, if like they're playing Godsworn or Reavers, or the Orcs or anything like that, they stand a really good chance.
Excellent, Phil. Why don't you talk about objective play here?
I think that these guys are uniquely suited to play pretty well into objective play. The only time I would maybe not feel that way is if you get longboarded. But if that's happening, you have 3 of the objectives, so it doesn't feel that bad, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the reason I say that is that, because you have 2 fighters that are hard to shift, like just sitting Gartok on one objective in the middle of the board can basically mean that if your opponent wants that objective back, they're going to have to come and kill you off of it. They can't just drive you back off of it. And that means that they're going to have to come and fight you. And that's probably what you wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. So being able to effectively take an objective out of the game with one of your fighters is a great thing to be able to do to an objective player. I think ghosts still have enough mobility to give you fits, but they're probably the only ones.
Sure.
I think just about anybody else playing objectives is not going to like that matchup very much at all.
Yeah, conversely, right. I will say that ghosts are not happy that you can do... I mean, like, your fact that you're starting on 2 damage means that you can kill a lot of them right out of the gate, so...
That's very true.
That's it. Yeah,
Horde warbands really, you know, I think they usually get their... you know, their lunch is eaten by Magor and his fiends quite often.
And then the last play style outside of flex, I would say, is control. And I think this is where they have the potential to suffer here. Like, if you have a way to never let them get started, if you keep them always at move 3 and only at 2 dice to attack outside of Riptooth, this is a warband that struggles if it never gets started, right? Like they,
yeah.
So I think control is potentially one of their more challenging things. And Phil, you and I kind of experienced that early in, or not early, but in season one, when I had that sort of Farstriders build that was based around like, I'm not going to engage other than to do like 1 damage at a time, and we'll see how much glory I can get off of that.
Yeah, back in the
quick thinker days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's nothing worse than losing a charge to quick thinker.
Right.
Which I think, I mean, it just goes to show that like anything that can deny their game plan to slow them down, like taking an attack away is basically like it feels so bad.
Yeah. I mean, I've basically chopped 8% of your game out from under you if I've denied you an activation.
Right. Yep.
That's where cards like Last Chance, Rebound, cards that say like, hey, you had the successful attack action, but now I'm gonna completely negate that by rolling
you
1 die.
Sure.
Yeah, those are really powerful anti Magor's Fiend cards.
Yeah. Yeah,
Narvia rebounding Magor's axe into his face. I don't think I'm ever gonna feel it. Just no.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that about covers Magor's, and I guess I wish I would have said it at the top, but for Magor's in particular, like this is a warband. I remember right when Shadespire dropped, I was excited like. Because I think we didn't even know what warbands we were getting. And then I remember, like, Cruel Taunt dropping, and it's got Gartok on there making some gnarly quote about, like, hey, I got your friend's face hanging off my trophy rack or something. like, oh, gross, man. But I was like, what are these dudes? Like, this seems like Reavers on steroids. So I have some built-in nostalgia for these guys because they're one of the warbands that I was most excited to learn about, especially once you started to figure out, like, oh, maybe they have a Fleshhound running around with them. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Only
thing that I think we missed with these guys that I think is pretty important for people that want to play them is board choices.
Oh, yeah. Oh, late sure. On us. Yeah.
Right. Just there's a couple boards I was going to throw out there. If you win the board roll off, I like to use the Cafran's Reliquary. How you pronounce that?
Yeah.
The good old aggro diamond or aggro pyramid, whatever people were calling it.
Mm-hmm.
But that one's a really good board. Set that up with the 4-star hexes that are closest to your opponent, right there, and just get in there. And then also the Molten Shard Pit, which is from the latest board pack that was dropped. It has the 3 lethal hexes all adjacent to each other.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Those are 2 really good ones. If you win the board roll, board roll, put those short or square with each other, and get in there.
I think the only one I'd add to is the Shattered Tower. I think you can put that where you have 2. You can square that up where you have 2 that are right on the starting line. And then 2 more that are just off, just 1 back.
Right.
So that those are all, I think, 3 excellent choices. And it's nice to have 3 choices for, if you have 3 in your pocket for, hey, if I win the roll, these are the ones I'm picking. Because with the new rule of having to pick a new board each time, if you win or lose 3 times in a row, you want to be able to have 3 boards, like that your first, second, and third choices for those.
Right.
Yeah. But what about if you lose?
And if you lose, I like the Arcane Nexus. I think it has a lot of lethal. It's the one with the three lethal axes all scattered. But that one is still good. It has starting hexes all on the borders, so kind of no matter which way your opponent orients the board, you still have a pretty good chance of having you know, some fires are able to get in there. And with the anti, you know, drive back mechanics that Zarkus and Gartok have, they're good you know, options if you have to put someone next to a lethal hex, put one of those guys next to the lethal hex.
Great point.
And then the cursed Obliette, I think that's how you say it.
Yep.
Ooh, that one also is, you know, pretty good choice for if you lose. But really, if you're losing the board roll off of these guys, you're already at disadvantage. So make sure you have plenty of tech in your decks, you know, with Famine Crystal, Hidden Paths, anything like that to get them more mobile.
Sure.
All right, those would be my choices for boards with these guys.
Yeah, you can speak to the pain of losing boards. I think, weren't you saying at ATC you lost boards like for, I don't know,
yeah,
six or seven games in a row or something crazy?
I kind of blocked all that part out. But yeah, if you lose boards, it's not fun for Magor and his fiends.
Sure.
So I suggest winning boards if you can.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a pretty good overview of Magor. Has anybody got anything they want to throw in before we start to wrap it up here?
Yeah.
All right. Hearing none, we'll proceed. First off, I want to say huge thanks to Matt. Thanks for coming on. It's awesome to have you on here and chat Magor is here. So I appreciate you making the time and kicking over. And as we've talked before, I'd recommend anybody go out and check out that first episode plus whatever else you proceed with by the time this releases from Crit Def.
Yeah, well, appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a blast.
Sure. In the realm of thanks, we want to always say thanks to the folks who've given us reviews. The UK threshold has been hit, so we got to see a bunch of reviews coming out of there. Bezzy82 gave us a particularly clever review. Andy Northeast UK, thank you. Creamy Winch. We had some constructive feedback from Bash Axis. Our last ep, I guess not the last, but the one before, we had a little bit of background sound. That's on me. We had a XBP731. Podbean has crazy names. I don't know if you guys are picking these names or what, or if
it's just robots listening to our
Skynet. Yeah, Skynet's coming up in this piece, taking us down. But thank you to anybody who takes the time. That's a big thing that helps us out. Is if you take the time to review. Or just rate us on wherever that. Or if you don't even have time for that, just tell somebody you know about the podcast and ask them to give it a listen. We really appreciate you doing that. Matt, before we move on, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you or go find your podcast, any recommendations for them?
Yeah, so podcast is called Crit Def, all one word. You can search for that on Podbean. Yeah, it's only on Podbean right now. We're looking to expand that to you know, other apps as soon as we can. But at the moment, it's on there. Crit Def, you know, it's just myself and our core group of friends cutting up and having fun with the hobby. And then if you want to contact me personally, I'm pretty active on the Facebook Underworlds pages. And then also on the big Warhammer Underworlds Discord server, Matt M on there.
For us, if you want to see our past content, you can go to mortalrealms.com. That has all of What the Hexes stuff as well as the other podcasts in the Mortal Realms network. You can check that out there. As we talked about, you can always drop us a review. We appreciate that. And I guess we've got recommended listening for you. Today I'm going to recommend Blood Part 2. That's a Buck 65 remix. It features Sufjan Stevens off of Dark Was the Night compilation. And you'll have a link for that in the show notes. Oh, quick hit. Matt, you got any recommend? I usually remember to ask somebody. If you have any recommended listening, you're always welcome to kick it in there.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. For all my old school metalheads out there, Slayer, Rain and Blood.
Yeah, all right.
Classic all right. Choice nice. For Corey.
Yeah, Phil appreciates it. All right. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
This is Matthew.
Yeah. All right. That's much stronger than mine. I might have to edit mine out.